From WJFF Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, Erica Thaxton, medical advocate for Victims Intervention Program in Wayne and Pike Counties, joins us to continue to shed a light and bring awareness to Domestic Violence Awareness Month. The LGBTQIA plus town hall at the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center is coming up. A safe and inclusive, supportive community conversation will be included about gender equality. We'll have a preview. Plus, Workshift Live with James B. Huntington, local economic perspective. And it's our fall fun drive, and we continue to check in with members of the community coming in to help us out today. It's Debbie McGinnis and Donna Fisher of New Hope Community. You can support us at 845-482-4141 or go online, donate at wjffradio.org. First, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. The Hamas-run Palestinian Ministry of Health in Gaza has released its latest casualty figures. It says more than 5,000 people have been killed in Israeli airstrikes. That number includes over 2,000 children and more than 1,000 women. NPR's Peter Kenyon reports from Jerusalem more than 15,000 people have been wounded.
Ministry of Health spokesperson Dr. Ashraf Al-Kedra announced the casualty figures. Separately, the Ministry of Interior announced more casualties from Israeli strikes on residential neighborhoods in Rafah on the Gazan side of the border. The Israeli military updated hostage numbers, saying 222 hostages, including foreign workers, are being held by Hamas. The IDF is also trading fire across the northern border with Lebanon. The attacks from Lebanon have fanned concerns that this could develop into a broader regional war. Today, on the 40th anniversary of the deadly 1983 attack on a U.S. Marine barracks in Beirut, Hezbollah launched more attacks across the border into Israel. Peter Kenyon, NPR News, Jerusalem.
Separately, relief aid is trickling into Gaza. Only two groups of trucks have been allowed to enter. The European Union's foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, says long lines of trucks are still waiting in Egypt on the Gaza border.
We, the European Union, we have increased our support. But there are queues and queues of trucks waiting to enter. They have to enter, and they have to bring the things that badly needed, in particular the fuel needed to make, I repeat, the desalination work.
The Dutch Prime Minister, Mark Rutte, is visiting Israel today, and French President Emmanuel Macron is expected tomorrow. President Biden held his latest phone call with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Sunday. Stocks opened lower this morning as energy company Chevron announced a $53 billion deal to buy rival oil company Hess. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average slipped about 70 points in early trading.
Chevron's tie-up with Hess is the second big oil company deal in as many weeks. It follows ExxonMobil's acquisition of Pioneer Natural Resources earlier this month. The purchase gives Chevron access to shale oil fields in North Dakota, as well as a major field in South America. Oil price has been hovering around $90 a barrel, although retail gasoline prices in the U.S. continue to slide. AAA reports the average price of regular gas is about $3.55 a gallon. It's fallen by a nickel in the last week and is down 30 cents from a month ago. The yield on 10-year treasuries has climbed to its highest level in 16 years, briefly reaching 5%. That's a benchmark for other borrowing costs, including mortgages. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
Stocks remain lower on Wall Street. The Dow Jones Industrials are now down 66 points at 33,061. The NASDAQ is down about 43 points. This is NPR. Police in Tennessee are searching for the estranged son of Nashville's police chief. John Drake Jr. is suspected in the shooting of two Tennessee police officers. Authorities allege the officers were checking on a stolen vehicle when they struggled with Drake and were shot. Their injuries are not life-threatening. Nashville's police chief says his son must be found and held accountable. Australia's Prime Minister Anthony Albanese says he'll go to Beijing next month. He'll be the first Australian Prime Minister to visit China in 7 years. NPR's Emily Fang reports this would mark a significant thaw in Australian relations with China.
Albanese confirmed the visit to Beijing the same day China's Commerce Ministry said it was resolving heavy tariffs it imposed on Australian wine in 2020. These tariffs on wine caused Australia's $800 million wine export market in China to effectively disappear. Tariffs on Australian meat and barley remain in place. Those tariffs are widely perceived as punishment, imposed after then-Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison called for an independent investigation into the origins of COVID in China. Since being elected to power last year, Albanese's government has sought to ease tensions with Beijing. Emily Fang, NPR News.
Game 6 of Major League Baseball's National League Championship is tonight. The Philadelphia Phillies lead the Arizona Diamondbacks 3-2. Also tonight, over in the American League, the Texas Rangers will meet the Houston Astros in the decisive Game 7. The series is tied. The pennant winners will advance to the World Series. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News, from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Renewal by Anderson, supporter of the American Cancer Society. Information about Renewal by Anderson's October campaign to help defeat cancer is at renewalbyandersoncares.com.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. It's our fall fun drive, and we are looking for your support at 845-482-4141 or wjffradio.org. And we have a challenge this hour from Michael, a listener in Livingston Manor. It's a $250 challenge. That means we need to raise the $250 during Radio Chatskill in order to get the $250 from Livingston Manor's Michael. So, Michael, thank you for doing that, and your generosity is appreciated. So if you can help support some of that, all of that, part of that, 845-482-4141 during our fall fun drive. And you can also go online to wjffradio.org. Now, during our fall fun drive, if you've been listening, we've been checking in with members of our community who've been coming in to help us out and answer the phones and also check in with what they're doing. And this morning, we get to hear from Debbie McGinnis, the CEO, and Donna Fisher, the Director of Marketing and Communications at New Hope Community. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Thank you for coming in. The community has been around, New Hope Community has been around for over four decades. Can you explain to folks, though, who may not be familiar with New Hope, what your mission is?
Sure. Our mission really speaks to the empowerment of children and adults that have intellectual and developmental disabilities so they can absolutely live their best life and a life of full meaning within their community.
And some of the ways that you do that are through your farm, your Hope Farm. Talk a little bit about Hope Farm and how important that is for fulfilling a mission.
Yeah, so we have a wonderful organic farm on the campus of Sullivan Community College, and we have an incredible growing season where a lot of the people that reside with us or come to a program with New Hope Community are able to come over, work in the fields, learn all about planting and harvesting, and they also work with the culinary program at the college. They do a farm-to-table thing where they'll pick food, bring it in, prepare a meal together. They also assist in the successful growing and harvesting of things that are donated to the student food pantry at the college. And we also donate to food pantries in the community. So all in all, it's this incredible holistic experience where you commune with Mother Nature and yeah. You learn, you work together, and you support your community.
I was just going to ask you about that. It's an empowering community, but this idea of holistic wellness. Talk a little bit about that too, and how important that is to the services that you provide for folks.
Yeah, holistic wellness is huge because we really need to be aware of our entire self and how our being interacts with our surroundings. So we've done a tremendous amount of things to really speak to the all of a person. And in fact, just recently in September, we had a ribbon cutting ceremony for our new sensory garden, which is on our campus. It's 1.5 acres. It obviously represents the five senses. It has a beautiful water feature in the middle. And it's just another opportunity for our staff, the people we support, the families of the people that we support to come in and really take a breath, sit down, enjoy their beautiful surroundings, listen to the water, and just sort of regroup if they need to.
Yeah, and you talked about the sensory garden and the food that you produce there and how food is really kind of like a medicine for folks that are there. And when it comes to nutrition and cooking preparation, that's also part of this holistic wellness.
Correct. And in fact, during the growing season, we do Friday deliveries to all of our residences. We have 38 residences throughout Sullivan County that support people. It is their home with intellectual and developmental disabilities, and it really supports healthy eating. So they're getting a lot of fresh stuff And it really rounds out a nutritional pattern that I think, again, speaks to being whole in supporting health for our bodies.
Yeah, I love how you, on the website, there's a category that says growth by growing. That's that just says it all in a nutshell there. One of the other things that you provide for the members of your community are another way of therapy, equine therapy with the horses. Yes. So powerful. Talk about the barn and the horses.
Yeah, this is a really fun feature on our campus as well. I think we're just such a unique organization, and we have horses, beautiful horses. We've got mini horses. We provide some wonderful riding opportunities for people that call New Hope home, and often they may start with needing to become more comfortable with a horse, and they learn to really develop a relationship that they feel safe in, groom the horse, ride the horse. There's so many different steps and dimensions to what that relationship is. But I should throw in, we also have like guinea pigs, and we have a bird named Harold, and we hatch chickens, and we've got a therapy dog named Bear and a barn cat, and it's a menagerie. But again, it really speaks to people, just like they soak it up. They love it.
Harold therapy.
Yeah, Harold therapy.
That's the other thing I offer. Donna, you do a lot of community outreach. I know you have a community outreach dinner coming up. Can you talk a little bit about that and how that services the needs of folks in the area?
Yeah, so I think this year is going to be our sixth annual community outreach dinner. And it started with, families in need coming into our building where they could partake in a meal together. But due to COVID, we transitioned and transformed the whole event, where it's now a drive-through. So we provide, through generous donations of restaurants and orchards, meals for well over 400 people. And those are for families in need. But we make it a real festive opportunity for everybody. So we have Santa, we have his elves. Kids, are getting candy canes and visiting with Santa. And it's just a really great interactive experience, while also, as a nonprofit, supporting people and those in needs and speaking to food insecurities in the county.
How do they get involved? How do they get to learn more about that?
So we do push some information out on our social media, and we do deliver flyers to local school districts, including mm-hmm. BOCES, Head Start, and some of the local schools in the area. And, this being our sixth year, we start receiving calls now, because people indicate that this is so helpful for them and want to see, what the date is and, how they can participate. Mm-hmm. And we're at the point now, people start lining up almost an hour ahead of time. Mm-hmm. So, it just really speaks to need.
It speaks to the need, mm-hmm. and it speaks to the availability and the power that you guys have of offering this up to folks, too, mm-hmm. and they look to you. And Debbie, you want to talk a little bit more about other ways that folks can get involved and in the community and other programs that you offer?
Yeah, so we have, first of all, we have a lot of cool relationships with community partners. We have a good relationship with, which I would love to note, SUNY Sullivan's nursing program. Mm-hmm. They come and have clinical experience on site, which is wonderful because they get to really understand people with intellectual and developmental disabilities and understand how to support their health care needs. BOCES is a huge community partner, and their students come over. They actually did some work for structures in our sensory garden. They helped do some repairs on our homes. But we also have programs with school districts. Liberty comes over in the summer with students and does a program at our farm. So we would encourage, if there are people and or community entities that would like to reach out to New Hope Community, truthfully, I think Donna Fisher, as our marketing and communications person, would be the starting point person, because we're always inviting creative thinking and opportunities where we can partner together so that we can make both New Hope stronger and our larger community.
Which is what you guys call the New Hope Difference.
Yes.
It's something that you want to be sure to involve everybody in the community with. And you can find out more information at newhopecommunity.org. Debbie, I know that you'll be continuing as CEO. What does it mean for you just personally to be able to be part of this community in New Hope?
You know, this has been a life-changing experience for me. I've been in this field actually since the mid-80s. I came to New Hope Community October 1st of 18, so it's just been a little over 5 years. And, you know, New Hope has been around for 48 years. Mm-hmm. And we have a tremendous amount of different supports and services. And when I see the love, the connection, the commitment, and the passion to a mission that's so important, I feel like I've walked into a family that really understands that it is so critically important for us to value every single human being, regardless of the differences, because truth be told, differences are a wonderful thing about our humanity. So I'm just so thrilled and thankful to have this opportunity, and New Hope Community is making a difference now and will continue to make even more of a difference in the future.
Donna, anything you want to share?
I think that, you know, I have always been in marketing and communications, and, you know, there's a lot of core fundamentals to marketing, and it's always been learning the industry or the sector that you're in. I've been with New Hope, a little over 7.5 years, and I have to say it's the most like purposeful job or career move that I've made. You just build really strong connections. You know, we're all aligned with the same mission. So you're connected to staff who all want the best for the people we support. You're connected to people we support who you want the best for. And you're just continually building meaningful relationships.
It's really special when your job is very meaningful and mm-hmm. you see that purposeful, the purpose that you're doing enacted in everyday business. You know, it's not just going to the office, punching in a card. You're seeing the results of mm-hmm. your labor just come to life. So
definitely.
Good. Thank you for doing that. And thanks for being here. Thanks for helping us out
too.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Debbie McGinnis, the CEO of New Hope Community, and Donna Fisher, Director of Marketing and Communications at New Hope Community. And there's more information about all the great things that they do there at newhopecommunity.org. Thank you guys so much for coming in.
Thank you.
For what you're doing and for just giving us a little hand today, too.
Thank you.
Thanks.
We'll take a quick break. And when we come back, VIP Victims Intervention Services program in Wayne and Pike Counties. We will get more from them after a short break. This is Radio Chatskill.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, host of On Point. Each hour of On Point is a journey to help make complicated issues understandable. Every issue brings more questions, like how did we get here? Why is this happening? And what does it mean? And how do we fix it? So let's figure this out and make sense of the world together. Join me weekday mornings at 11 here on Radio Catskill.
Here comes another Fall Fun Drive Fact.
Hi there, I'm Joe Johnson, the volunteer who's on air with you during All Things Considered on Monday afternoons. Do you know that it costs us more than $33,000 to bring you All Things Considered and all of the NPR programs we air?
That's a fact.
Every program has a cost, yet this station is free for everyone because of listeners like you. Give us what you can now at WJFFradio.org. Thanks.
Or call us at 845-482-4141. We have a challenge this hour from Michael in Livingston Manor. We are challenged to raise $250 this hour. And if we do, Michael will give us $250. So call 845-482-4141 or go to WJFFradio.org. Make a donation of any amount that you can to contribute toward that challenge and to our overall goal during our fall fund drive. This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The month of October is recognized as Domestic Violence Awareness Month. 1 in 4 women and 1 in 9 men will experience severe domestic violence during their lifetime, with approximately 15 million children a year being exposed to domestic violence. We're continuing to raise awareness about domestic violence. Today, we're talking to Erica Thaxton, the medical advocate of Victims Intervention Program for Wayne and Pike Counties. She joins us now. Good morning, Erica.
Good morning, Tim. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you for joining us. Thanks for being here. And thanks for the work that you're doing to bring awareness to these issues. Again, Domestic Violence Awareness Month is designated in October. But as I said in the introduction, there are so many staggering statistics associated with that. We need to raise that awareness for more than just 1 month.
Yes, definitely. And the statistics that you had listed were in regards to the severe category. Severe being you know, things like burning, physical assault, you know, dabbing, those sorts of things. But it's, on the other hand, 1 in 3 women and 1 in 4 men statistically will experience domestic violence at some point within their lifetime. So across all different spectrums of financial abuse, emotional, physical, all different aspects of it. And even more so for marginalized communities like LGBTQ, that's 1 in 2 will experience domestic violence in their lifetimes.
I think when we talk about domestic violence, folks may think of it as just that sort of severe category that we were discussing. But it really is broader than that and affects so many people and affects folks across generations and could last a lifetime.
Oh, definitely. You know, there's so much more to domestic violence than what people realize. And there's so many other different like subsets or categories. You can most certainly have domestic violent relationship within parent and child, adult child and senior parent, between family members, anything like that. So the term domestic violence really does mean within the home. And the big portion of that is between intimate partners. So that's really, that's the big one. So for instance, in 2022, 104 victims had died due to domestic violence in Pennsylvania. 54% of those were killed by a current or former intimate partner. So it really does affect more people than we realize.
And when we talk about children, there's obviously the psychological and behavioral impact of trauma on students, children from elementary school students to high school students. Can you talk a little bit about how it might impact school-aged children?
Right. So the funny thing about trauma is there is no textbook response. Everybody is different. So that's why when we see or hear about, you know, that somebody wasn't believed because they weren't upset or they weren't afraid or all these different things, that doesn't necessarily mean anything. Trauma affects everyone differently. And at the end of the day, any trauma that we go through can rewire the actual pathways in our brains to how we deal with future situations, especially when it's someone like a child whose brain is still very much developing, as well as it's a constant or repeat exposure. So although problems down the line can range across the board, big ones that we typically see are trouble in school, trouble socializing. You know, they are very much isolated. Also, you know, maybe they may have a hard time telling the truth or trusting in that, things like that. But they really can. Any abrupt change in attitude or overall demeanor is definitely a sign that something is going on and should be looked into further.
VIP in Wayne and Pike counties, you are there 24/7. You are educating and empowering folks. There's a 24/7 helpline. It's 570-296-HELP. Also VIPempowers.org. But in order to do some of the work that you do, you need some help. I understand you have a sip and paint fundraiser coming up.
Yes. So we have some upcoming events, two of which, the one I'm really excited about, the Sip and Paint fundraiser, that is a new fundraiser that we are starting this year. We have a weekly group, a support group here. It's called the Healing Art Group, and it is for survivors to help process that and continue with their healing, building up their support system while doing different types of art therapy. So on Saturday, November 4th at St. Vincent de Paul Church in Milford, we will be hosting a Sip and Paint fundraiser. It is $35 per person, and any participants must pre-register and prepay to secure your seat because there's only a limited number of seats available. But all of the funds raised go directly back to our Healing Art Group. members, and that is to provide additional crafts, additional materials needed for future projects. So that's something that we are really excited about. Also, we all know the holiday seasons are coming, and a big thing of that is that everybody is not as fortunate as the person next to them. We at VIP always have an adopt-a-family type of fundraiser or drive. We are always looking for donors that would be willing to help provide a Christmas to a person or family in need. It's not only individual donors, but we also have business donors where the whole business sponsors a family. It is all completely anonymous, so there is no way for it to come back to the donor or the person that's receiving it. And there's no minimum requirement. So a donor does not have to adopt a family of four members or more, or they do not have to spend a certain amount of money. Our families and our counselors work with our families to provide the donor with wish lists and generalized interests of each person. But we are always looking for donors to help expand that project and help spread the Christmas holiday cheer further throughout our communities. Mm. So information on that and more, including, you know, apparel. We have different VIP t-shirt sales and different types of clothing and all sorts of good stuff can be found on our social media pages through Facebook and Instagram, as well as on our website. So that's at vipempowers.org.
And again, we are raising awareness now to a population that typically goes unseen and unheard or unrecognized. And this month and what we're talking about is important to shine that light and let folks know that, you know, what's going on is not right. It's not okay. Let's remind folks who may need help how they can get help.
So if anyone is experiencing domestic violence within their relationships, or if you know somebody and, you know, maybe you love somebody that you know something is not right here, please pass along our information. They can certainly give us a call. We also have a text line. We have an anonymous online chat service through our website as well. So safety is paramount here. And for some people, they are not able to safely verbally communicate over the phone. Maybe it's better for them to text or to be on the computer. So those are additional options. But all they have to do is reach out to us. Our services are always 100% free, and they're always confidential. We are mandated reporters when it comes to things such as child abuse. But again, that is made aware from the get-go. And it's not only just to victims and survivors. It's for their family. It's for their friends. You know, just because it's not you going through this situation, it is incredibly traumatic and hard for you to know and see something going on within someone that you care about's life and not be able to make it better, to not be able to fix it. And that this is a situation that is impossible for a third party to fix or improve. So we also always extend our services to their family members, to friends, as well as indirectly affected. So kind of like collateral damage, right? Mm-hmm. If you do not have to have a direct link to that person in order to be traumatized by it, for instance, look at a drunk driving accident. You have your first responders or any innocent bystander that so happens to be driving down the road and come across this accident. They stop or the first responders arrive and the scene is traumatic. Those are the types of things that can stick with you for a little while, especially if you need help processing it. So anybody, victims, survivors, friends, family, and indirectly affected, you know, third party member, please give us a call, reach out to us, and we'll do all that we can to help.
Yeah, that number is 570-253-4401 or 570-296-HELP. And the message of VIP also wanting to get across, you are not alone. It was not your fault, and you can get help. Again, the VIP 24-hour hotline anytime, 570-253-4401 or 570-296-HELP. We've been talking to Erica Thaxton, the medical advocate for Victims Intervention Program in Wayne and Pike Counties. Erica, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much, Tim. This is a great thing to get out there, and I hope that someone that needs us hears this and knows that there are people who love you, there are people that care for you, and there are people that want to help you. You do not deserve this. This is not your fault. But you can start taking those steps when you are ready to get yourself into a better place. And we are more than willing and able to help you do that.
Erica Thaxton from VIP, thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
We'll take a break. And when we come back, local economic perspective from James B. Huntington on Work Shift Live. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support comes from the Women's Health Center in Homesdale, Hamlin, Waymart, Carbondale, and Lords Valley in Pennsylvania. Physicians and certified midwives who deliver. The Women's Health Center is a Wayne Memorial Community Health Center. WMH.org. NACL Theater Highland Lake. Innovative performance and community action. NACL.org. And from listener donations at WJFFradio.org.
My name is Tony Cavan, and I'm the managing editor for Standards and Practices at NPR. In some ways, it's the ethical guide for the newsroom. Do we know something well enough to report it? Are we invading someone's privacy by reporting it? There's a whole series of issues that we have to deal with as a journalistic organization. Much of my job is balancing the conflict between making ourselves as transparent and as open as possible, and at the same time, protecting those people who have trusted us to tell their stories. I do contribute to my public radio station because I believe they cover our community in a way that nobody else does, and far better than anyone else does. There is so much falsehood out there right now masquerading as journalism. The role of people who try to tell the truth is more important than it's ever been. And so is the role of the people who support that work. Donate to this station today.
Go to WJFFradio.org to make your donation now.
Yes, and make your donation now to help us during a challenge this hour. We have a $250 challenge from Michael in Livingston Manor. We haven't heard from anybody just yet this hour. You have a little less than half an hour to get there. So call 845-482-4141 or go to WJFFradio.org to support local news and fact-based journalism that you can trust. And support local economic news with James B. Huntington joining us now. Mr. Huntington, good morning.
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, listeners.
All right, we've got a lot to get to. What about the latest economic data going on? Does this mean we might see some higher interest rates? It's hard to keep track.
Yes, we got some words from Fed Chair Jerome Powell. And as usual, there people are doing their tea leaf reading or analysis or whatever you want to call it on these words. He said the central bank is moving carefully with further rate moves, but that they might need to raise interest rates more if economic data continued to come in hot. He said there are two goals, which is we should all know by now, and one is to bring inflation down, and the second is to avoid hurting the economy by making rates too high. So he's balancing between those two things. He called recent growth a surprise. He was surprised by how good the last jobs reports was, and people were saying, one chief U.S. economist at J.P. Morgan, a rather big position in the field, said that Powell did not sound like he was anxious to raise rates at the November meeting, but the December one from this point is up in the air. Mm. So we may get higher interest rates, but probably not next month.
And, of course, everything going on in the world globally, the news that's going on in the Middle East, that's causing uncertainty in the global economy as well. How might that increasing tension impact the economy, both globally and locally?
Well, locally for the Middle East, it's causing some chaos. The Israeli stock market is swinging up and down, and ours has been doing a little of that. I'll say, let's say that if Israel and the Middle East are sick, then we will get at least a cold. Those things are too related, especially for generally a progressive allied country that is connected quite a bit with the U.S. So we also have problems in Israel with foreign investment. One of the assets they have, even for such a small country, is about $200 billion in foreign exchange reserves. That means that if they get into trouble, they may need to sell some of that, and that would cause prices to go down at that level. That could cause a real drop, depending on which ones they sell. So those could cause problems. The real concern I have is that our stock market has generally really disliked trouble in the Middle East. We've had times where it was almost by itself was dragging the Dow and the NASDAQ down because people really didn't know what's going to happen there. So we're also getting some effect here with tourism. A lot of Americans have gone to Israel, and that's not happening at all right now. It's gone down to almost nothing. Mm-hmm. We also have NVIDIA, which is the world's largest maker of artificial intelligence-used chips. They are big in Israel, and they've canceled the summit there, so that could caused some problems with chip supplies, which have been kind of precarious anyway, mm-hmm. if there is much for that.
Let's move on to the New York Attorney General, Letitia James, is continuing a crackdown on cryptocurrency companies. She's filed a lawsuit Thursday saying that some of these firms were involved in a $1 billion fraud scheme. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, this is quite a fraudulent situation here. I thought that when she was filing suit, it was some impropriety or some small sort of thing, but this kind of thing sounds really bad. We have it's Gemini Trust, it's Genesis Capital, and Digital Currency Group, who is connected, actually the parent company of Genesis. So we have two that are connected and one other one, and they're saying that Gemini, which is an exchange, lied to investors about the dangers of a program they had started. They were promising investors up to 8%, which is hard to do really right now, if they lent their cryptocurrency to the Genesis company. Apparently that's not coming at all. They also assessed the status of crypto as being much more risky than they had originally thought, and they improperly did not share that information with investors, talking about hundreds of thousands of people who had money in this. In all, it's various pieces of fishy stuff. It will be worked out. I mean, filing a suit does not mean that it will be won, but obviously, there's something that needs to be straightened out here.
Yeah, the Attorney General in this lawsuit is seeking to bar them from doing business in New York or operating in the financial investment industry at all.
Yes.
Another big story coming out this morning, actually. Chevron agreeing to buy, or saying they're going to buy, Hess Corporation for $53 billion. A lot of folks might know Hess locally for those little trucks that your kids have at Christmas under the tree, but this is more than just a little Christmas present.
They're big companies. I mean, Chevron does not have much of a presence in our area. It's mostly West Coast and Florida and Texas and such. But Hess is scattered around nationwide, and it's getting to be, or it's planned to be, a $53 billion purchase. It's not going to be for cash. It's going to be for stock. That will create a huge company. I couldn't find anything good about companies, about how big the oil companies are in the U.S., but that's awfully large. So if you've been buying, if you have Hess or if you have it in your portfolio, then you are probably going to do quite well, because they're giving out $171 a share. So that looks very good for people who have been holding that.
You can get more of those Hess holiday trucks.
Yes, that's what they've had. That's true. That's what they have been famous for. Their toy trucks.
Well,
$53 billion will buy a lot of toy trucks.
It'll buy a few more. Let's. We need to get going a little bit. So let's wrap up with where the stock, oil, and the prices ended up last week, and how do things change?
Okay, over the past week. The changes over the past week. Gold is at 1977, up 66. That's very strong, and that really is the Middle East talking. Silver, 2314, up 64 cents. It's almost as much on a percentage basis as gold. The Dow, 33127, dropped 543. We had three straight days to finish the week of losses of about 300. That's gone up and down. It's not only down, but we'll see where it goes from here. It may go up and then down again. NASDAQ, 12,984, down 423. That did considerably worse. It's looking like we're having some AI-related problems, that not only the froth from people over-investing and such in it is coming off, but there are some real structural problems with AI right now, which I'm sure are hurting NASDAQ. Oil, 87.72, up 33 cents, not really doing a lot. And it seems to me pump prices are not going up. They're staying the same or going down a little. They're well below $4 a gallon in our area, if you know where to look. Bitcoin, 30,462. Wow, up 2,600 and some. That's getting to look like some kind of alternative thing. Maybe people are scared with the Middle East and other things that's affecting it, but it's heading toward a year-long high. In fact, it may be there already. I don't know how it's doing today. The pound, 121.46, down 21 hundredths of a cent, they still have 6 or 7% inflation over there, and that's keeping it low. The euro, 1.0598, up 61 hundredths, notably better. 100 yen coin still at 67 cents. So overall, things are strong, except the stock market, and that could go any direction now.
All right. He's a local author and economist, James B. Huntington, and joins us every Monday for Work Shift Live, local economic perspective. James B. Huntington, thank you so much.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, listeners.
All right. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be back with more Radio Chatskill. Just a minute.
Compiled with love. Like an...
On live radio, things don't always go according to plan.
But, I'm sorry, that's my dog.
Ooh. Is that Buster? Hello, Buster.
Currently $250,000 per account.
We should know, it sounds like your dog likes to talk about the FDIC too.
I mean, Martinez, things might go to the dogs sometimes, but NPR and this station stay focused on you. Here's how to support us.
Go to WJFFradio.org to make your donation now.
And you can call 845-482-4141. And yes, sometimes on live radio, things don't go according to plan. We do need to go according to plan, though, with our challenge from Michael in Livingston Manor. We've got a challenge of $250 out there, and that means we need to raise $250 from you. Call 845-482-4141 or go to WJFFradio.org and make a donation of any amount to help us get there. And now, this Wednesday, Sullivan Allies Leading Together, or SALT, and the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center present the Sullivan County LGBTQIA Plus Town Hall. Radio Catskills' Patricia Rubio recently spoke to Dana Halperin, a SALT member, and Ilian Hutchinson from Hurleyville Performing Arts Center, and Julie Gray Owens from Equality New York about the event.
Sullivan Allies Leading Together, Gender Equality New York, and the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center are partnering to present the Sullivan County LGBTQIA Plus Town Hall. It's a safe, inclusive, and supportive community conversation, and it's going to be at the Hurleyville Arts Center October 25th from 7 to 9 p.m. Doors open at 6:30, and then we'll start the program around 7. So we've worked with Gender Equality New York and Julie for a few times here in the county over the last few years. She's come to our area and done a Gender 101 presentation that's been an introduction to the gender expansive community. We'll start the night with a bit of an abridged presentation of that. And then we're going to have a roundtable discussion where audience members can talk about issues, needs, questions, concerns. And we're just trying to have a constructive exchange of ideas to create a better, safer, and more equitable future in Sullivan County and throughout the state.
And Julie from Gender Equality New York, can you tell us what Gender Equality New York is all about and how did you partner with HPAC?
Long story short, back in 2017, actually it was earlier than that, it was 2015 when Empire State Pride Agenda, which was the New York State LGBT advocacy organization, went out of business, basically, and left the transgender and gender non-binary community and intersex community, for that matter, without our civil rights. We had reached out to a number of trans advocates across the state and started the work of doing town halls and just trying to get information from around the state with the what we call the gender expansive community, to find out what was happening and so forth. And so that started the process of actually building Gender Equality New York, which we applied and ended up becoming a nonprofit. We are incorporated and started doing the work of town halls and forums and education and so forth. And really where we're focusing currently is the education part, because there's a lot of misinformation, a lot of untruths, that type of thing. And for example, we train now here at in Nassau and Suffolk, both police academies, to give our police officers, our law enforcement officers, information about the community to make them aware of issues. For example, you stop a trans person for a traffic stop for some reason and they give you their license. The picture on the license may not match the person who you've pulled over. What is an officer to do? What should they be aware of and so forth? Giving them information regarding pronouns and so forth. That's gone very well. We do a lot of work with healthcare facilities. We do a lot of work with educational. We do work with, as an example, Hofstra, Malloy here on Long Island. We have done town halls across the state with the goal of trying to make sure that we understand where the community is at, what are their experiences, what are the issues that they're facing, that type of thing. It's always important to stay in contact with the people that you're trying to represent, that you're trying to advocate for. And so what's important for us is to hear the voices, to hear the issues that they're facing. There are also some issues in the respect that our community may not be aware of some of the steps that we've actually taken to move forward. For example, driver's license now in New York State have the ability to not only be M or F, but also X. Maybe some of our community members may not be aware of that. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done both in both directions of communication. And we're hoping that this event coming up will have an opportunity to help people who are part of the LGBTQIA community to make them aware of the fact that there are support systems available. And one of the things that I know that I'm very proud of, and I know that Dana and Eliana are also very proud of, is the fact that we are going to be tabling with other organizations so that people who need services will be able to get them, be able to be aware of them and so forth. But this is really a fact-finding event to hear what kind of issues that people in Sullivan County are facing as we try to just live our lives and move forward.
So you're looking to have that conversation or start having conversations and deal head on with the misconceptions that folks might have.
Usually with our education, we try to do the basics to get people to understand that these things are not, we don't choose to be gay. We don't choose to be transgender. This is how we're wired. And what we're finding is that more and more studies are showing that when they do brain studies of, for example, transgender people, they're finding that a trans woman, someone like me, when they study the way that the brain works through MRIs or also in postmortem studies of transgender people's brains who have not taken hormones, they find that, for example, someone like me, a trans woman, our brains are very much similar to a cisgender woman's brain. And they're finding conversely that a trans male, their brains are formed more like a cisgender male's brain. And when we tell people, this is who we are, this is not a lifestyle, this is not a choice, this is how we're wired. And if we could get the general public to understand that, maybe they'd be a little bit more understanding of who we are and not say, oh, it's all about woke. It's not about woke. It's about respect. It's about understanding communities that are marginalized. And I think that sometimes cisgender and heterosexual people just think the world is supposed to be just like they are. And for 90% of them, that's probably true. But there's another 10, 12% of the LGBT community that doesn't necessarily match up with that. And all we're asking for is, in many cases, our basic rights or, for example, basic respect that we would give to anyone. That's really the issue that we want to get across to people who may be allies or questioning and want to know a little bit more about the LGBT community. And I believe that the only way that we're ever going to really establish our communities is to make sure that we educate. And that means education with different religious organizations, whether it's with our legislators, whether it's with just the general public, whether it's with police officers, whether it's with healthcare, it really doesn't matter. The idea is to get people to just get just a little taste of our lives, who we are, and what we deal with.
And I think that's so important, especially where we live here in Sullivan County in a very rural area. A lot of folks can feel isolated or just because they don't have access to transportation, like in the bigger cities like New York City or Chicago, where there's more resources available within walking distance or a train or a bus. Here, everything is so distant. And so these are great that you're having conversations are happening here where normally they wouldn't be happening. So this event is happening on October 25th. What do you want folks to get out of this and who should be attending?
I would love to see anyone who's questioning their ideas about gender and about sexual orientation. As we look at it, there's probably 30% of the world understands who the LGBT community is and supports it. There's another 30% that probably doesn't really care and doesn't want to know about us and wants to continue their hate. And then there's a whole group of people, maybe 40%, maybe larger, of what we call the movable middle, who are good people, but just don't have the information that's necessary to be able to connect or understand who we are. And really, the work that we want to do is to connect with that, what we call movable middle, and make them aware of who we are and give them a little bit of understanding about our community so that they have a better understanding. Look, not everyone is going to understand or going to want to deal with it. But when we get down to really basics, what we're talking about is just basically people who want to be able to love whoever they want to love, who want to be whoever they want to be, and they're not looking to do anything harmful or hurtful. They just want to live their lives, and they want to live it in peace without any concerns about violence or any kind of negative messages or anything like that. We pay taxes. Many of us do the right things. And so we just want to live in harmony with everyone else, but sometimes it takes a little bit more. It needs us to step outside of our comfort zone, if you will, and do the outreach that's necessary to connect with those people that go, oh, I never really thought about that. I didn't think of it that way. That's what we need to do. We need to contact those people, and we need to make them understand that we're not something they need to fear, but rather someone that hopefully they'll be willing to at least accept or support in some cases.
Elena Hutchison from HPAC, can you tell us more about this partnership or how this event came to be?
Actually, SALT actually came to us because they had this really amazing project. We had done a program with Julie maybe 2 years ago that was very successful. And I think part of HPAC's mission is celebrating the human spirits of dance, music, and films. Any opportunity we have to get people to connect with each other, be in community, and enjoy expressing what they're interested in and expressing the arts is always something we want to support. So we have the space. It's a really lovely space. And so we're very glad to be able to host it and have everyone join us and really start a conversation.
Dana, I'll ask you what I asked Julie. Who do you envision coming to this event on October 25th?
The first two events that we hosted with Gender Equality New York was geared towards a cisgender community who wanted to learn more about the gender expansive community and learn how to be better advocates and allies. For this event in particular, I have to give props to the Cooperage Project in Honesdale because they hosted an event over the summer that we got some inspiration from. And so this event, we want to be open to everybody, people who fall within the LGBTQIA plus community, people who are advocates and allies for the community, people who want to learn more, people who may not really understand the community and may view themselves a little bit at odds with the community. As long as you're coming to the discussion with a respectful and safe mindset, the doors are open to anybody. There are a lot of misconceptions. There's a lot of things that are talking points for mainstream media that have been misconstrued and they become like abstract ideas. I'm a local of Sullivan County, born and raised here. I work here. I participate in this community. And for me, this is just a little bit of an effort to individualize the issues a little bit, to let people have the chance to get to know somebody like me who is community on a personal level, instead of just thinking of me as somebody who's spoken about on the news and there's somebody that there's a lot of misunderstanding about. It's an effort. We're hoping a lot of young people come to this. We want all the folks in this community to feel safe when they're grocery shopping in school, out in public. So that's why we want to especially invite young kind of high school age kids to come so that we're able to hear a broad spectrum of concerns, issues, problems, things to celebrate.
And you talked about the issues or the needs. Can we talk more about that? What are some of the specific issues and needs and concerns that you think should be addressed during community conversations like this?
I think it's often just a willingness to really start a conversation, to meet people really, Dana said, one-on-one and say, hi. How are you? We're neighbors. And what is the conversa? What are your interests? I think ultimately people are people and they enjoy doing all the things that everyone else loves to do. And anytime there's most of the, even some of the comments and stuff online were very much just were easily solved and easily explained. As an art performing arts center, I think we're interested in also what the LGBTQIA plus community is interested in specifically. We do the Pride event. We're reimagining what that will look like and make it feel even more inclusive than it already is and expand the definition of LGBTQIA so that it's like a little more, it's as universal as it is so that it's actually being portrayed in the way that it should. And we don't know unless we ask as well.
Well, we're talking to Dana Halperin, Elena Hutchison from HPAC, and Julie from Equality New York. Thank you so much for talking to us, letting us know about this event, the Sullivan County LGBTQIA plus town hall that's happening on October 25th, starting at 7 p.m. at the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center. For Radio Catskill, I'm Patricio Robayo.
And thanks to Patricio for that report. That's going to do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. There's still time to donate during our fall fun drive, though. Call us at 845-482-4141 or go to WJFFradio.org. If you support the local news you just heard, we talked to the CEO and marketing director at New Hope Community. We talked to the VIP services in Wayne and Pike counties to talk about what's going on in the Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And then we also spoke to LGBTQ plus Town Hall, which is coming up on Wednesday. And we heard from local economic perspective as well from James B. Huntington. All that in just 1 hour right here on Radio Catskill, Radio Chatskill. Call and support that right now, 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. Support your local public radio station right here in your backyard. 50 degrees is high today, low tonight, 33. It is WJFF Jeffersonville, W233AH Monticello that you're listening to, Radio Catskill. It's 11 o'clock. On Point is next.